Lair, said Jess. Shut up and let Papa sleep.
Seraph didn't sleep, though truthfully, she was tired as well. But sitting peacefully on the soft bed with her husband's head in her lap was as effective as a week's worth of sleep. While she waited, she worked on loosening the magic net the Salsenti wizards had bound around Tyr. She didn't fight them, but just encouraged the unraveling that time would have brought. When she had done what she could, she half opened one eye and saw that Lair was sleeping sitting up. Jess was alert and watchful. He nodded his head at her so that she would know that he'd seen her looking. The very peace that had settled in her heart told her it was really Jess who watched and not the guardian. She thought it was a good sign that the guardian would trust in Jess. She closed her eye and let herself enjoy the quiet.
Someone's coming, said Jess softly.
Tyr rolled to his feet and stretched.
Thank you, love. Would you all please stand so that you aren't directly in line with the door? But no disguises, eh? If this isn't Foran, I'd rather keep your presence quiet. But if it is Foran, I don't want him thinking that we're trying to ambush him.
There's three of them, said Lair as he obediently shifted over without getting up.
One of them is Tuarsin. One of them is wearing a lot of metal, and the third is in soft-soled shoes.
Tyr looked at Lair in surprise. Well, thought Seraph, she'd told him that the children had been growing into their powers.
How do you know it's Tuarsin?
Tyr asked. Lair grimaced.
I know. It bothers me, too. Mother says I'll get used to it, but I liked it better when I just thought I was a good tracker. Bringing magic into it robs me of the satisfaction of having a skill. Tuarsin's wearing leather-soled boots, and there's a nail sticking out of one heel. Gives him a stomp-click-stomp-click kind of walk.
There was a soft knock on the door, and Jess's soundless response made Seraph shiver with the cold.
Who is it?
Asked Tyr, deliberately sounding groggy and irritable.
Foran,
replied a firm tenor, not a whit less irritable.
Here at your command.
Tyr grinned and opened the door.
Thank you for coming, your greatness. Come in. I really hate that one,
said a young man who could be none other than the Emperor. His bright eyes slid over Seraph and Jess, paused on Lair, and returned to Tyr.
It's bad enough to be your mightinest and your highnest by people who consider you a fool, but to be insulted for my extra weight,
he patted his waist, which was plump,
is beyond the pale. I hope you didn't wake me up to meet your family, although your wife is certainly lovely enough to be worth any effort on my part. I'm afraid that Eivor is miffed with his brother for having the audaciousness to force him to get me up, and twice as miffed that I hadn't told him that I was meeting a prisoner in the bowels of the palace.
Tyr grinned at him.
How did you know they're my family?
Foran snorted.
A lovely traveler lady and two boys, one who looks like her and the other like you? Please, I'm supposed to be a drunkard, but I am not a complete idiot. I know that you told me she'd come, but isn't she a little early?
He turned gracefully and indicated the big man who'd closed the door behind them, the one Lair said was wearing metal.
Eivor, I'd like to introduce you to Tyr of Redurne, from your own sept. Tyr, this is Eivor, sept of Lehi, and my friend.
My sept,
Tyr said, bowing his head briskly.
Who are you that you call the Emperor to attend you?
Said Eivor, ignoring Tyr's greeting. Jealous, thought Seraph.
I am his humble servant, said Tyr smoothly.
He's helping me, said Foran. The path is more dangerous than you think. It is thanks to Tyr that I realized how dangerous. He's been helping to find out who the raptors are and at the same time subverting the Passerines.
That's why you started the sword drills, said Tuarsin, sounding disillusioned.
Seraph, being a mother, heard the unspoken, you didn't really care about us.
He told me, said Foran, not looking at Tuarsin,
that there were a number of young men who wanted but a little direction to be the best chance I had of controlling my empire.
You thought we could aid the Emperor? Said Tuarsen, sounding almost shocked.
As if, thought Seraph with exasperation for the male half of the species, being used by the Emperor were a great thing.
I know you can, said Tyr. Where else is he likely to get a bunch of hotheads who can fight and aren't sworn men of some sept or other?
Kallarn's job, said Tuarsen. You arranged Kallarn's job.
Actually, said the Emperor, clearing his throat, that was me.
Tuarsen's face was bewildered when he turned to Tyr.
The Emperor is a drunken sot, he said, as if the Emperor weren't standing next to him. He follows Eivor around like a lost puppy and does whatever Eivor tells him to. You, Tyr, are a bored soldier who has found a hobby to help make a year in captivity pass more quickly. You find the raptors annoying, and the masters even more so. So you decided to see what you could do to tweak their tails and gain the admiration of the Passerines. When you started, you found that you actually liked a few of us.
I was never allowed to be anything but a drunken sot, said Foran coolly, but without anger. And everyone follows Eivor around like lost puppies.
I saw a bunch of rowdy boys being led into hell by a pack of carrion eaters, said Tyr. As I rather liked some of you, and despise men who play games with other people's lives, I decided to see what I could do about the situation.
It works because he does care, added Lair. If he'd just been trying to use you, you'd have seen through him. Eivor, leaning against the door, rubbed his face.
Would someone care to tell us why we're here now? Certainly there are better times for theatrics than the wee hours of the morning.
The path is preparing a move to preempt me from taking control of the young men from them, said Tyr. Mirsaria told me that they are intending to have a disciplining, a particularly brutal method they employ to keep their secrets. One of the boys is singled out and punished by everyone. I gather that the boy who is punished sometimes doesn't survive. I think that they'll choose Kallarn, but they might take Tuarsen or Kissel, as they are the three who are my closest associates.
Foran humphed, then said,
I can warn Kallarn on my way back to bed without anyone being the wiser, but we ought to finish the introductions before we attend to business further. Do be a credit to your parents' instructions and manners and introduce us to your family, Tyr.
Tyr bowed and grinned sheepishly.
This is my wife, Seraph, Raven of the clan of Isolde the Silent. My son, Jessophy, whom we call Jess, Guardian. My younger son, Lair, Hunter. Seraph, Jess, Lair, may I introduce you to Foran the 27th?
Over the polite murmurs and shuffles, Tuarsen said,
26th.
Foran grinned.
Only if you don't count the first one. I always do, since without him there wouldn't have been an empire, whatever his son Foran the first or second said.
Tuarsen smiled reluctantly. No wonder her husband liked this boy who happened to be emperor, thought Seraph. They were very much alike.
I had intended to warn Kallarn, said Tyr, returning to the matter at hand. But my wife pointed out that this disciplining is the best chance we'll have of clearing the whole lot. Everyone is supposed to attend them. They'll be expecting some resistance from the Passerines. Too many of them have begun to look at the things the path wants of them. But they won't be expecting an outside attack.
When will it be? Asked Foran.
Sometime in the next few days, replied Tyr.
Foran shook his head.
There are 200 of them, and 5 wizards, and the Sept of Gerant and his men aren't here yet. I have
20 men here, said Eivor, who are my men, not my father's.
And my wife tells me that she can bring another 50 or so, lightfoot, armed mostly with knives with a few swords, said Tyr. Travelers.
Suspiciously, Eivor asked, why would you travelers be interested in this?
Because our people are dying out, Seraph said.
For as long as I remember, the Seps have been trying to destroy them. If my friends help you, Foran, would you be willing to return the favor? Foran nodded his head slowly.
I'll do what I can. I don't have the power that an emperor should, and championing the travelers is not going to help. But I'll do what I can.
Will that be good enough? Asked Eivor. Seraph smiled. The Path have been killing travelers for centuries. We just didn't know about them until now. If Foran would not invite us in to help him, we would go after them on our own. But it's much safer to invade the palace under Imperial command.
Mircea will try and find out when this disciplining will take place, continued Tyr.
I'll know sooner, said Tuarsin. Mircea will have to wait until someone tells her about it. Me, they have to send for.
With your permission?
He glanced from Tyr to Foran, as if he didn't really know whose permission he needed.
I'll let Kissel know, too, in case it's me they've decided to use as an example. How much lead time do you need to bring in the travelers?
Asked Foran, and they all began planning. Seraph settled back and gave them information as they asked for it. Clearly the Emperor, Eivor, and Tyr were having the time of their lives, and the younger men were almost as bad, except for Jess, who seemed content to stay in the background. It amused Seraph to see that the Emperor, the Sept of Lehi, and his younger brother all ceded the leadership to Tyr, though they all outranked him, and he had them hanging on his every word. Chapter 16 The next morning, Tyr was bone-tired, but more peaceful than he'd been for a long time. Seraph was here. Well, not here. She'd gone off to play diplomat among the travelers, which was pretty strange. The only person that he knew less suited to diplomacy was Alanath.
Keep your guard centered, he told one of his passerines. Remember, this isn't about first blood. It's about who lives and who dies. Make sure you are one of the former and not the latter.
He paced behind his troops, watching foot positions, when a servant caught hold of his sleeve.
Talaridge requests a moment of your time. Tuarsin, called Tyr. Kissel, run the drills for me. If I'm not back, break when every man's shirt is wet through.
Tuarsin stepped out of the line and made a quick mocking salute as he did. He didn't look nearly as tired as Tyr felt, and he'd had no more sleep. It made Tyr feel old. The servant took Tyr to one of the smaller rooms that served as the Raptors' meeting halls and opened the door for Tyr's entrance. The room had been partially screened off with a delicately carved wooden panel. Four black-robed figures sat in gold-upholstered chairs ringed in front of a cheerful fire, two empty chairs in the center. Talaridge, also in his robes, stood in front of the fire. Talaridge looked up when Tyr entered, though the others kept their eyes on the fireplace. Ah, thank you for attending me, Baskins. You may leave. The servant shut the door, leaving Tyr alone with the Path's wizards. Come have a seat, Bard, Talaridge said in an unreadable tone. Warily, Tyr sat on the edge of one of the empty chairs, as the master took the other. He had the odd impression that Talaridge's calm was just a thin film spread over turbulent waters. You have cost us much, my friend, Talaridge said. Whatever possessed you to try and take the Passerines from us? Did you think that we would allow it?
You aren't doing anything with them, replied Tyr. There are a number of fine young men amongst the Passerines, and a few who are a waste of shoe leather.
They are useful to us, said Talaridge, sounding distantly amused. Tyr took note of the effect, planning to save it for some time when he wanted to be obnoxiously patronizing. Just as they were.
We've called a disciplining, which will return control to us,
but I fear that very few of these Passerines will make it to Raptor now. I was particularly upset when you took the sept of Lehi's young brother. I had great hopes for him, and it's too bad about the young musician, Carlarn. We shall miss having music in these halls when you both are gone.
I see, said Tyr, deciding to let the master direct the conversation into the gently ironic tones he seemed to prefer. I take it that my demise will happen a little sooner than you planned?
There was a noise from behind the screen, but it was too faint for Tyr to identify.
I'm not any happier about it than you are, the master said.
Apparently, the others had all been told to sit and be silent, because none of them had done anything more exciting than breathe since Tyr entered the room.
Owls are few and far between, and this haste will destroy our plans. That makes two failures in as many years. We've never had this much trouble controlling a bard. I assume it's a bardic talent you are using to win over the Passerines.
Tyr frowned at him.
How could it be? You've told me that you have my order under control.
He'd used the methods Geraint had taught him instead, because he'd never relied on his order for much, unlike a traveler-raised bard.
I wonder that none of our other bards have done such a thing, said the master.
Because a traveler bard was hardly likely to worry about the lives of a bunch of Salcenti thugs in the making, thought Tyr. But he didn't say anything. The master waited politely, but when Tyr didn't respond, he shrugged.
At any rate, I personally am most distressed at a few other things you've cost us.
He got to his feet and strolled to the screen.
Come, bard. And maybe you will be sorry as well.
For want of a better thing to do while surrounded by five mages, Tyr got slowly to his feet and followed the master's beckoning. The others got up silently and followed. A woman was tied naked to a chair, and someone had obviously been testing, in the time-honored fashion, how well flesh fared against knives and other things. Her face was so battered that it was unrecognizable. But Tyr knew the hair.
Mercaria, he said.
She stiffened when he spoke, and he realized that her eyes were so swollen that she must not be able to see at all.
Mercaria has been telling us things, said Telleridge. Haven't you, my dear?
He patted the top of her head, then took out a dagger and cut off the gag.
I'm sorry, she said, her face turned blindly toward Tyr. I'm sorry, sorry.
Shh, said Tyr, putting some force behind the words.
It doesn't matter. Shh.
She kept shaking, but she quit apologizing. Either his words worked, or Seraph was right about the unraveling of the master's spells, and she'd felt the magic push he'd given them.
I was angry about the Passerines, said Telleridge.
Angrier still when I questioned Mircea this morning, and realized that instead of keeping an eye on you, as she was supposed to, you had taken her from us too. She has been a valuable tool for years, and you've ruined her.
His movement was so quick, so unexpected, that before Tyr realized what the master had done, Mircea's blood showered him from chest to knee. Telleridge pulled up her head and held it through the throes of death.
She's been so useful over the years. Where am I going to find another wizard who is so good at getting close to our traveler guests? I have no more daughters.
He dropped her head and wiped his hands on his robes. Black robes hid the blood much better than Tyr's light-colored clothing. It wasn't, thought Tyr, that he hadn't believed they were evil. He had just forgotten how sudden death could be, and how final. He'd liked Mircea. Tyr still had his sword from practice,
but this was too well orchestrated. If his sword would have done him any good, they'd never have let him keep it. Had Mircea betrayed their plans? She hadn't known it all, but she'd known enough.
"But you know the thing that bothers me the most?" asked Telleridge, intruding on Tyr's grief and anger. "How did you get to the Emperor? Do you know how long it took us to come by a harmless ruler? How many people gave their lives so that I could mold the proper Emperor? Then suddenly he is making an effective grasp for power. It wasn't until I spoke with you the other day that I drew a parallel between what you've done to the Passerines and what happened to the Emperor."
Telleridge shook his head.
"And what have you left us to rule in his place? Eivor is next for the throne, but although he is an idiot, he is a well-meaning idiot. You've ruined Toarson." He heaved a theatrical sigh. "Not that it will matter to you how much trouble you've caused, but I thought you might enjoy sharing the stage tonight. I'll leave you for last so you can watch your little projects die."
Tyr stared silently at Mircea's corpse.
"Ah, no words for me, bard," taunted the master. Yes, thought Tyr. It was time to see just how much control they had over his order.
"Only cowards torture women," he said, not bothering to dodge the staff that took him across the cheekbone.
Toarson rubbed his hair dry with a towel as he walked down the secret ways that would lead him back to the rest of the palace. Alone, he allowed himself to smile with remembered satisfaction at Eivor's face when Toarson had burst into his rooms and demanded to be taken to the Emperor. Firmly convinced that it was some stupid wager, Eivor had almost refused him. But he hadn't. Toarson was surprised about that. His brother had seldom paid any attention to him at all, except to order him about. When he'd sworn on his honor that he carried an urgent message to the Emperor, Eivor had heaved a martyred sigh, rolled out of bed, dressed, and done as Toarson asked. On the way back to their rooms after they'd spent the night in councils of war, Eivor had patted him on the back, an affectionate, respectful gesture he'd never given Toarson before. The passage Toarson had taken opened not far from his rooms in an obscure storage room. He glanced cautiously out of the room, but there was no one in the hall to see him as he slipped out of the storage room and into his own. He'd changed into the uncomfortable clothes of court and was halfway to the door before he realized that there was a vellum envelope on the cherry wood table near his bed. His pulse picked up as he slid it open and read the invitation. "Now," he said. Seraph curled up, enfolded in the bedding that smelled of Tyr. She'd left him while the sun was only a faint hint in the sky. It had been even easier than she expected to talk Benrolln and his clan into serving as the Emperor's foot soldiers. She'd left Lair and Jess sleeping, and left the sheep farm just outside of Taella where they'd been staying, to come back here. Tyr hadn't been here when she'd returned to tell him of her success, but she'd known that he would have to continue his normal habits or risk alerting someone. So she'd climbed into his bed and reminded herself that he was alive. If someone came in, they'd not see her unless she wanted them to. Someone knocked at the door.
"Tyr, it's Toarson. Are you back?"
Reluctantly, she got out of the bed and pulled the covers flat. She opened the door and motioned the young man in.
"He's not here," she said.
"I can't find him anywhere," Toarson said, sounding a little frantic. "The disciplining is set for early this evening, and I can't find Tyr."
"It's all right," said Seraph, his anxiety lending her calm.
"He'll want to know,
But it's Foran, your brother, and my people who really need to know right now. Go to your brother and tell him to get word to Foran, and to get his men and meet my people in the passages we discussed. I'll get the travelers, and after you've told Eivor, you go about your day as if nothing were wrong. Eivor can get word to Foran. Just make sure you are armed when you go to the disciplining. He nodded and left the room. Seraph set out at a dead run through the labyrinth of passages. There was no time to waste. She needed to get Benroln. Tyr had survived a long time here without her to watch over him. She had to believe he'd be all right. Eivor and his men waited for them, as he'd promised, in a long, dark corridor large enough to have held twice as many people. Relief crossed his face when he saw Seraph and the Librarian's clan. "I don't like this," he said without waiting for introductions. "Toarson said he couldn't find Tyr anywhere. He looked for Mysaria to give her a message for him, but he couldn't find her either, and none of the other whores knew where she was. He said that he'd last seen Tyr at sword practice, but that one of the masters called him to a meeting. Then I couldn't find Foran in any of his usual haunts, though his horse is still in the stable." Seraph pushed her anxiety aside and forced herself to think clearly. The Path were upset with Tyr for taking control of the Passerines. So they took him, and... her thoughts stuck there. Would they simply have killed him? "I don't see anything to do except follow the plans we laid out last night," she said at last. Beside her, Benroln nodded his head.
"If what Seraph told us about this group is true, this is the best chance to destroy them. It would be better for us if the Emperor is there to bear witness for us, but the Path needs to be destroyed here and now."
"Neither Tyr nor Foran are essential to the destruction of the Path now," said Seraph with painful honesty. "Without Tyr, though, we might have to fight the Passerines, too. And if Foran is not there, Benroln, your men will have to try and get out as soon as this is finished, and take all of our fallen, too. Maybe Tullaridge has taken them for part of the performance tonight. If the Masters have hurt Tyr, they'll have a hard time controlling the Passerines."
"You don't know the Passerines," said Eivor.
"I know my husband," she said. She didn't miss the uneasy way Eivor's people surveyed the exotic lot of armed travelers or the puzzled looks aimed at Bruid. Old women were not usually part of a battle force, but healers could look after themselves on a battlefield.
"We need to take them tonight," Seraph said again.
Eivor nodded slowly, then turned to the troops around him. In short, punctuated sentences, he described what they were doing and why. The white robes she'd taken from an unwary raptor were woolen and itchy, but Seraph stood quietly next to Bruid, who was carrying on a conversation with the white-robed raptor beside her, talking, of all things, about growing tomatoes. Hanea had laid spells on all of them, look-away spells to keep them from being noticed, and minor illusions to hide things, like Seraph's lack of height and her sex, that would otherwise attract attention. When Hanea had told them all to avoid being noticed, Seraph didn't think that exchanging gardening tips with the first raptor they happened upon was what she'd had in mind. Seraph looked out over the room. Jess was somewhere, too, though he hadn't bothered with the white robes. No one would see him until he wanted them to. Lair was with the rest of their little army. The Passerines were gathered already. She'd counted them. Assuming Tyr's protege was the boy they intended to produce, all of the Passerines were there. Though they didn't have hoods on their robes, Seraph found that the robes obscured enough differences that she had a hard time picking out Toarson, the only Passerine she knew, from the rest. There were chairs in rows in front of the stage, and the Passerines were all directed to those. Even as she watched, the last of them took his seat. There were more raptors than she'd hoped,
nearly 3 times the number of passerines. Well enough, she told herself. It would be even less likely that anyone should spot the cuckoos in the mix.
Followers of the secret path!
Seraph stiffened at the whiff of magic that accompanied the words, so that they rang out and appeared louder than they really were. The room quieted. Bruid softened her voice to a murmur, but continued comparing the benefits of growing tomatoes in various soils. It had been raven magic that gave power to the words the black-robed man standing in front of the curtain stage had said. Why hadn't he used the bardic order? A bard would have done more than just overpower the talking of the crowd. He could have caught the attention of everyone, even tomato zealots like Bruid's conversation partner, and held it. Perhaps they didn't know that, or maybe they just preferred to work with more familiar powers. A Salcenti mage, she thought, would be used to having magic work a certain way, like Raven or even Cormorant. They wanted the orders for power, but even Volus had had no use for subtlety.
"When you come to our eyrie, you take vows," said the wizard. "First, never reveal to anyone what we do here. Second, to attend the eyrie at least 3 evenings a week. Third, to obey the raptors and the masters over and above all other oaths. One of you has broken the last 2 of these rules. We are here today to discipline him, not in hope of reformation, because he will never again be welcome to our eyrie. Telluride sure knows how to capture his audience, doesn't he?"
marveled the raptor talking to Bruid, his voice shaking with age. But he returned to his favorite subject with more ado.
"I find that the tomatoes I grow in the orangery..."
"But that is not all we are here for."
The master's voice dipped into sorrow, but Seraph thought he overdid it a bit.
"In recent weeks it has come to our attention that our passerines have been led astray by the magic of our traveler guest. The magic that keeps his at bay here in our halls is dependent upon your resistance. If you want to be his follower, his servant, there is nothing our magic can do to protect you. So, we have to take more stringent measures with him."
They had Tyr. Was he alive?
"There is a third problem that has held our attention these past few years. Our empire, founded by heroes, built by men of vision, men of intelligence, is even now presided over by a drunken sot. Bored with the available women and wealth, he has decided to interfere with the men who try to preserve the empire. Who is to save us when our frivolous emperor chooses to change the ancient boundaries of the septs? Who? We shall save ourselves."
He raised both hands, and the great curtains behind him creaked and squealed as they slowly opened to the master's magic. On the stage was a frightened young man, naked and chained by his wrists to a ring in the floor of the stage. In the center position was the emperor. They hadn't stripped him, too worried about arousing the wrong emotion in the crowd, judged Seraph, but he was wearing the same robes he'd been in last night, and they looked the worse for wear. But it was the third man, Tyr, her eyes found and locked on. He was alive, she thought with a rush of relief. She could see his ribs move as he breathed. Like the passerine he'd been so worried about, he'd been stripped naked and chained, but he lay curled up and still, his skin red and black from beating. Rage rose up in Seraph like a red tide. She stared at the master who orchestrated this mess and took what her magic could tell her. He was a Salcenti wizard of moderate power, aided by 2 raven rings, one of them very old.
We deal first with the greatest offense. Foran the 26th, we, the followers of the secret path, judge you unfit to rule our empire.
The master turned to the audience and gave the signal for a response of some kind. A roar of approval, perhaps? But it never came, because Foran spoke.
Actually,
he said with dignity that caught at the heart of every person in the room,
it's Foran the 27th. I've always felt that since the old farmer started the empire, he ought to get credit for it.
Even Bruid's new friend quit speaking. Seraph felt a relieved grin tug at her lips. Tyr was doing better than he appeared if he could give Foran's mundane words that much power. Foran looked a little taken aback by the response his quip had drawn. Go, Tyr, thought Seraph fiercely. She glanced at Telleridge, but even with the partial immunity the raven rings he wore gave him, he was too close to Foran to do anything except listen. Foran was not at a loss for more than a breath.
Some of what Telleridge has said is correct. I have not been the best of emperors, but I didn't realize that anyone needed me to be that. Like you, I thought that the Council of Septs, ruled by people like Telleridge here, were far more capable than I ever could be. That should have been true.
He was taking too long, thought Seraph, watching Telleridge struggle against the bardic touch. Tyr couldn't possibly maintain his hold on the whole room for very long, not in the condition he was in. She stepped away from the wall and began making her way down toward the auditorium. If she could get to him, she could help.
They are intelligent men, and well trained to their office. If they chose to rule justly, they could surely do so. But they rule instead for personal gain. Some of you were encouraged to work a little mischief in the Street of the Weavers last year. Did you know that the council leader's riches increased by half after that incident because the weavers now pay him for the right to sell their goods in their own craft stalls? Gorish is one of the raptors who sent you out to attack the weavers. Did any of you gain from that?
Foran took a deep breath, and Seraph felt the crowd stir as the bardic touch faded momentarily and then strengthened again. With the shifting of the crowd, her only path to the stage closed up.
Those raptors among you will know that almost half the Passerines who are here will die mysteriously shortly after they graduate to being raptors. Some of you know that it is not so mysterious because you aided in those men's deaths. Why kill so many? Because some of you are already outgrowing the trappings of childhood. Some of you realize that it is not necessary to prove who you are by how much destruction you can cause. You are the first ones they will kill. Like this young man beside me, who was targeted only because he loves old instruments more than he loves tormenting the younger Passerines. I haven't been much of an emperor, Foran said. I've disappointed people who cared about me all my life, just as you have. Mostly my failures have been passive failures, things not done, rather than great and terrible acts. Just as yours have been until today. If you harm men whose only crime is to fall afoul of a power-mad politician, then you take a step that cannot be undone.
Tyr crooked his neck and peered out of his one good eye to see how Foran was holding up. Something, he thought. Something had walked close to the Emperor. It leaned nearer as if it were whispering something in Foran's ear, then faded from Tyr's view.
Jess, he thought.
Anxiously, Tyr looked at the audience, but they didn't seem to have seen that nebulous shape. Foran took a breath.
You have a choice tonight. You can hold to the oaths you made to the masters of the path. Realize that they have not given you an oath in return, as I did when I became emperor. I owe you fair hearing in disputes. I owe you a place in our society. And I owe you an emperor worth serving in return. You must choose now.
He looked up, scanning the crowd. When he saw what he sought, he nodded once. Then he began speaking rapidly.
Choose who you fight carefully, because this is a battle for the soul of the Empire.
He swung one of his chained wrists to indicate the wall of the Eyrie and, as if he'd wielded the magic himself, the wall disintegrated into so much plastered dust and splintered wood. The noise and magical backwash distracted Tyr, and he lost his tenuous hold on his own magic. The failure of his control hit Tyr like a blow to the head. It awakened every inch of the screaming flesh the masters had abused. He cried out, and his vision blackened. The sounds of battle erupted around him, and half-dazed as he couldn't remember where he was or what he was doing here without a sword. The destruction of the wall caught Seraph by surprise. She had been supposed to help bring it down, but, unable to see over the crowd, she must have missed the signal. Or Hanea had used an opportune moment in the Emperor's speech. Irritably, Seraph poked the tall, bulky raptor who stood in front of her. Since she'd used a touch of magic, he jumped aside with a yelp, pushing several other men over and briefly clearing a visual path for Seraph, just as Eivor's men and the travelers began pouring into the room with a war cry that was even more effective in a room designed as a theater than it would have been on an open battlefield. The astonishment of such strangeness held the followers of the path oddly still, until the first of Eivor's men gutted the nearest raptor. A man near Seraph drew his sword, but he was looking toward the far side of the room for his enemy, so he never even noticed Seraph until her knife intersected his belly. A young blue-robed boy drew his sword and finished the job, but gave her white robes a wary look.
"I'm Tyr's wife," she said, tossing back her hood.
"Pleased to meet you," he said, grunting the last as he used his sword to catch the blade of a raptor who was a bit quicker than most to realize that the Passerines were as much a threat as the fighting men who'd come through the wall.
"I'm Kissel."
She had to get to Tyr, discarding the robes both because they got in her way and because they might get her killed by one of Tyr's Passerines. She aimed for the most direct path to Tyr, whom she still couldn't see. The fighting was widespread by now, and the heaviest fighting lay between her and the stage. Seraph called her magic to her. Blindly, instinctively, Tyr tried to rise to his feet, since a down man on a battlefield was a dead man, but something held his wrists, and he couldn't call any strength to his muscles.
"It's all right, sir," said Tuarson's familiar voice. "I'll keep you safe." "The Emperor," managed Tyr, falling back to his damaged knees and biting back a moan.
Screams were for people who weren't as weary as he was. There was a series of clanking sounds, battle sounds that ended in a grunt and a thunk. Tuarson, panting a bit, said,
"Kissel's with him, and someone cut him loose and gave him a sword. I never knew that Foran knew how to fight. Never thought..."
Another thunk and gasp.
"Someone as fat as he is could move that fast." "The masters?" asked Tyr.
Seated and calmer, he found that his vision was coming back a bit, but not well enough to sort through the chaos of battle. He wiped his good eye with the back of his hand. His hand came away wet, but he could see again.
"I don't see him," Tuarson said. "I was watching Eivor and his men boil into the room. When I looked back, this place was covered in fighters, and I thought I might come up here and bear you company a bit. We've a nice view of the fighting up here. Those two boys of yours can surely fight."
Someone in white blundered into the small area of stage that Tuarson was guarding, and he sent the raptor on his way with a kick that impaled him on a sword held by a man with moon-pale hair.
"Gessa," said the man.
"Any time," said Tuarson.
"Kallarn?"
asked Tyr, his returning vision allowing him to see that the boy's place was empty.
"Naked as a newborn," said Tuarson cheerfully. "You're not able to get high enough to enjoy the sight, but I can see him from here.
Remember all those times you told him that he carries his guard too high?
Yes.
You should have made him fight naked.
Tyr laughed one short bark, then held his breath and his ribs.
No joking right now, he managed.
Lair rolled onto the stage and then bounced up and ran over.
Good to see that you're alive, Papa. But I think I speak for us all when I tell you that I'd rather not worry about you again for a while. Parents are supposed to worry about their children, not vice versa. Let me get a look at those chains.
He held the manacles in his hands and closed his eyes. After a moment, the locks clicked open. Lair grinned at his father's expression.
I don't know how opening locks ties in with being a hunter either, though Brew had explained it to me a dozen times.
He sounded pleased with himself. He looked at Tuarsin.
Go ahead, said Tuarsin. I'll stay here.
Thanks,
said Lair, and he leaped off the edge of the stage. Having completed the task Kanea had given him, the Guardian took a quick glance around the room. Lair was fighting at Eivar's side and accounting for himself quite well. Just as his gaze found Seraph, she raised her hands and tossed a half-dozen men into the air. Obviously, she was in no need of immediate protection. He turned to go to his father, but the Sept of Lehi's brother was standing over Papa's crumpled form and seemed to be having no trouble fending off attackers. The wizards, who posed more of a threat, had other things on their minds than hurting his father. A double handful of Passerines were doing their best to get onto the stage and attack the masters. Too many of them to allow the wizard's magic to be an effective weapon. The Guardian knew, remembered from other battles fought long ago, before Jess's father's father had been born, that keeping the Passerines away would soon weaken the Salcenti wizards too much for them to be a danger to Tyr. Satisfied that they were all safe for the moment, the Guardian jumped off the stage to return to Hanea's side, slipping between fighters who mostly moved out of his way without ever looking at him directly. The noise of swords clashing and men screaming excited him almost as much as the smell of blood. A man bumped his arm, and the Guardian turned on him with a snarl and a flash of fangs. If the man hadn't retreated, falling backwards over a body on the floor, even Jess could not have held the Guardian back. Hanea stood alone near the fallen wall. He couldn't tell if her spells to avoid being seen were working on everyone else, or if they were just smart enough to stay away. Mother had told him that spells usually didn't work right on him. There were two men attacking a boy who was stepping back rapidly to avoid being overrun. The Guardian could see that the boy wouldn't stay away from their blades for much longer. He glanced at Hanea, but she was all right. The Guardian dropped the sword he held and reached for the form of the great cat. He wanted to taste blood, not feel flesh part against steel. He picked the nearest raptor and leaped onto his shoulders, driving him down to the floor. As his claws sank deep into meat, the man's pain and fear washed through Jess. The Guardian reveled in the searing sensations, which only raised his bloodlust further. The other antagonist paused to stare, but the Passerine recovered a little faster and killed his opponent before beating a rapid retreat. Death and the boy's fear fed the battle rage, and Jess turned his attention to the man who lay beneath him.
Jess!
The great cat halted, his mouth already opened to still the struggles of his prey.
Jess, come back! I need you!
Hanea sounded frantic. Her hand touched his tense back.
Jess!
She said. Trembling, fighting, Jess forced the Guardian to step away from the downed man, even as the beast roared its thwarted rage.
What?
He managed, the emotions and pain of the battle raging around him raw without the Guardian's protection. Hanea smoothed her hands over him, and the worst of the clamor faded until it was manageable. The Guardian would have been better, but Jess couldn't let him loose until he had a moment to calm down.
Look on the stage, Hanea whispered.
What do you see?
There had been wizards on the stage when he'd carried Hinea's message to the Emperor. 5 stood in plain view, but the other held to the shadows. When his father had lost control of them, they, like Hinea, had stood back from the battle and aided their people as they could. Now 4 wizards lay crumpled on the ground, and something that caused the Guardian to take control again, fed on the 5th.
"What is that?" asked the Guardian.
"A raven's memory," she said. "A vengeful ghost, though I've never seen one so substantial. It's almost alive." The 6th wizard, anonymous in his robes, slipped off the stage and toward the destroyed wall. No one looked at him, though he passed a few men quite closely.
"One of the wizards is getting away," the Guardian observed to Hinea, calm again.
"Where?" she asked. But when he pointed, she didn't see him.
"I'll follow him," he decided,
and Jess, anxious to get away from the battle, agreed with the Guardian's decision. Neither of them listened to Hinea's protest as the great cat leaped over a heap of rubble to follow the escaping man. Seraph blew her hair out of her eyes wearily and kept moving forward. The large young man who had been so helpful in dispatching that first raptor had stayed by her side as she used whatever means necessary to push through the battle. There was a limit to her magic, and after the first blast won her only a few yards before the fighting spread into the cleared area she'd made, she decided that she was going to have to use more subtlety and less power. With the sword she scavenged from the floor, she used magic to lend force to her blows until the blade slid through bone as if it were water. She'd taken the time to add her own see-me-not spell to Hinea's efforts. Blood covered her from the elbows down, weighting down her clothes with more than physical burden. But she wasn't here to fight fair. She needed to get to Tyr.
"You know it's true what he said," panted her young friend Kissel.
"What's that?"
she managed, dropping another raptor who was raising his sword to attack a blue-robed man from behind.
"A man would be smarter to face an enraged boar than to cross my wife."
The boy managed to imitate Tyr's style.
"Huh,"
she grunted, kicking an unsuspecting man behind his knee and dropping him onto his opponent's blade.
"How flattering."
The boy grinned wearily.
"He doesn't seem to mind.
Can you see him yet?"
"No," he said. "But I can see Tuarsen on the stage. He'll do his best to keep him from harm."
Tyr knew that he should get to his feet and claim a sword, but he just couldn't manage it. As if he read his mind, Tuarsen said,
"It's all right, sir. Just having Eivor in here fighting for the Emperor took most of the heart out of the raptors. All the Passerines called out his name as soon as they saw who it was. Even that squid you've had Kissel and me watching was attacking the raptors. Remind me never to let him behind me with something sharp. All that's left now is just a few of the raptors and mercenaries who didn't leave fast enough. Eivor will call quarter in a minute, as soon as he thinks that his men have had enough of killing."
Sure enough, through the sounds of battle, all the louder for being inside the cavernous chamber, came a bass rumble still distinguishable as the words,
"Quarter! Give quarter! Surrender or die!"
picking up in volume as more voices took up the cry.
"Waste of time," murmured Tyr just before he passed out. "They're all guilty of treason. Foran will have to hang 'em all."
He wasn't actually out all that long, because there were still clashes as a few desperate men continued to fight when he woke up. He opened his eyes just as an old, quavering voice said,
"Wooeya! I see that those giggling twits were right about Salcenti men."
Tyr stared at the oldest woman he'd ever seen, then grinned.
"You must be Bruid," he said. "The healer."
"And it's a good thing for you, young man," she agreed. You must be the bard that woman's been so upset about. Now let me see what this old biddy can do about making you want to stay with the living.
She clicked her tongue against her teeth when she saw what they'd done to his knees.
Good thing you did this with a lark nearby, she said. If you'd done it somewhere else, you wouldn't be walking on these again.
I'd give you a kiss, said Tyr.
Then he had to stop and grit his teeth as her touch brought burning pain that was worse than the original blows had been.
Except that my wife would finish what the path began.
It is good that a man knows his place, said Seraph comfortably from somewhere behind him. He hurt too much to turn so he could see her, so he gave her a vague wave. She crouched down on her heels beside him. So, she said, I know where there is a white robe you can have, but that might make you a target. On the other hand, parading around in nothing at all might make you a different sort of target. He laughed, then moaned.
Why is it that the first thing someone does when you've cracked your ribs is make a joke?
You don't have cracked ribs, said the healer, looking up from his battered knees. You have broken ones. And hold off on that robe, girl, until I see to them as well. He doesn't have anything that I haven't seen better.
Hello, said a traveler, crouching down on Tyr's other side. You must be the bard.
Tyr, said Seraph. This is Kors. Kors, my husband Tyr. Kors, what do you want?
Ah, thought Tyr contentedly. All that, and under a breath, my Seraph at her charismatic best. We were wondering if you'd seen the Guardian. We know he was here, but none of us can locate him. Most all of what I've seen is a bunch of people from the knees down, quipped Tyr.
Then he added,
Actually, I saw him. Or at least something that was probably him whispering to Foran. I suppose he was telling Foran that Eivor was waiting as planned, because it was just after that that Foran signaled the ravens to bring down the wall.
I didn't see it, said Seraph sourly. I was trying to get down to you and I got caught in the crowd. Hanea brought down the wall by herself. I didn't even get to singe that bloody wizard to ash. By the time I got in the clear, all of the masters were down and dead, or at least not moving.
Well,
said Kors, clearing his throat a little.
That's kind of why Benrolln sent me over to see if you could find your son. A lot of us saw something kill the masters, one after the other, but we couldn't quite see it. We'd all appreciate it if you could find Jess and make certain he doesn't mistake anyone else for the enemy. Jess isn't that stupid, said Tyr.
But he worried about what all the violence had done to the Guardian, too.
He's probably gone off to find someplace quiet.
Wait until I've gotten the ribs stabilized, young man, chided the healer, moving creakily from his knee to his side, pushing Kors out of the way. And then you can go looking for your boy.
It took more than a few minutes, but finally, with Lair under one shoulder and Tuarsen under the other, Tyr gained his feet, Seraph's robe stopping a few inches below his knees. The joints in question still felt like they'd been hit with a club, which they had, but at least he was able to shuffle over to take a look at the victims. His first clue was the rather sick look Foran sent him before he turned back to talking with Eivor. They'd piled all the master's bodies together. When Tyr arrived, Kors and Kissel hauled one of the bodies out and pulled back the cowl. The dark veil that lined it, making the robes a more effective disguise, had been ripped so that the face could be revealed. Tyr had the boys help lower him until he was sitting on the ground. The sight he had out of his good eye was getting worse, and he supposed it would be swollen all the way shut by tomorrow. But he wanted to see them, to know that they were dead. Tyr's first reaction was a dull sort of surprise. He'd never actually seen any of the master's faces, except for Telleridge's. But somehow,
he felt as if he ought to recognize them anyway. He didn't even know which one it was. His second was a realization that the dried, sunken look was due to more than age.